Hello and welcome to episode 32 of the Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. My name is Ben.
I'm Craig.
I'm Derek.
And this is Stank.
I think you did it on purpose that time. This is Stank.
Yep. It's April Fool's. I gotta go crazy.
Oh, it is April Fool's Day.
You didn't fool us. We knew it was on purpose.
Tank, did you have a story this week?
I do have a story this week. And it is a real story, I promise. So,
not an April Fool's joke.
Not an April Fool's joke.
All right.
Imagine this is Sunday when you guys are listening to it, or throughout the week, yes. Not on April Fool's Day.
Indeed.
So my story, I was playing laser tag, and I won, so that was cool. I'm at like 6 in a row for a win streak at laser tag.
Nice.
But anyway, I'm going to put that on my resume. So anyway, and I went to drive home, and I turned out of the parking lot and started driving a little bit, and I saw the highway, and I thought, should I get on the highway? And I decided, no, I won't get on the highway. Therefore, I need to stop at this light very fast. And so I stopped at the light very fast, and then I began driving again, and the car behind me turned on its lights and asked me politely to pull over.
Oh,
so it was
dear.
A cop. And
just this random guy in a Toyota saying, hey, can you pull over, please?
Yeah, so I got pulled over, and the cop walks up, and he says, do you know why you're pulled over? And I said, no, not really. He said, well, it's because you turned out of the parking lot poorly. I'm like, yeah, that was fair. And you didn't stop at the light. He's like, I wasn't sure if you're gonna stop in time. I'm like, yeah, that's fair too. So anyway, then he starts asking me questions. He goes, did you drink anything tonight? No, sir. Did you do any marijuana? No, sir. Are you on any methamphetamines? No, sir.
Why? Okay, wait a minute.
It's a bit of a jump.
Why would they ask these questions?
So yeah, he asks these questions though, and then he says, can you open your mouth and say ah. And so I'm thinking the same thing, like, man, this is really detailed. I mean, I guess I can see him thinking I'm drunk, but anyway, I do that. And then he goes, I'm going to need you to step out of the car.
Whoa.
Okay. Sounds good. So I get out of the car. He tells me to put my hands down and my feet together. And then he says, okay, so we're out here tonight looking for people who are potentially driving intoxicated. And the way you drove, we thought you might fit that bill. And I need to tell
you, that's an insult.
Yeah. I need to tell you something before we begin. Your pupils are exploded. He goes, I can't think of any good reason why that might be. Do you have any explanation for that? And I go, yes, sir. I just finished playing laser tag. My scorecard's in the car if you want to see it. So since it's completely dark at laser tag, I guess my pupils were filled up my eyes, basically. And so he thought I was on some sort of crazy drugs and my eyes were freaking out. And I was driving all over the place. So anyway, he did the whole pin side to side and in my face and have me estimate 30 seconds while my eyes were closed and my head was in the air, some crazy stuff like that. But I passed my very first sobriety test. I'm very pleased and got to go on my way with just a warning. So,
man, you're right. I would have assumed that was an April Fool's joke.
Yep, not an April Fool's joke. This happened like 2 weeks ago. I've just been waiting to tell it.
Are you sure it's not an April Fool's joke?
It's really not cool. An April Fool's.
That's fun. That's pretty good.
Yeah. It's only the second time I've been asked to get out of my car. First time I was patted down.
Wow. What kind of non-existent drugs were you on that time?
That time I didn't even get a warning, though, so.
Wow.
I just have one of those evil faces, I guess, and I realize, oh, this guy's cool.
The dangers of laser tag, young children.
So that's my
Heed
story.
Tank's warning.
If you play laser tag, drive really well.
And we're into Tech You Should Know, the part of the show where we bring you 7 tech topics from throughout the past week that we feel are worth your consideration. The FBI drops the court order to make Apple unlock an iPhone 5C. After more than a month of a heated standoff between the Justice Department and Apple over access to a phone belonging to one of the alleged San Bernardino shooters, the government announced today that an alternative method for breaking into the phone has worked. And so the debate is over for now. So do you guys think that the FBI actually broke into the phone, or?
It's all one elaborate April Fool's joke.
That would be a crazy elaborate April Fool's joke. Foxconn finally agrees to buy Sharp. The Foxconn acquisition of Sharp was almost a done deal a few weeks ago until Sharp revealed some additional liabilities at the 11th hour it had not previously disclosed. This meant Foxconn had to go back to the drawing board and reassess the deal, renegotiating some parts of the contract with Sharp. The initial offer was worth $6.2 billion, but today the companies announced Foxconn will buy Sharp in a $3.5 billion deal. This helps cement Foxconn as a vital part of the supply chain for many phone makers, since Sharp makes LCD displays for smartphones and tablets.
Foxconn just sounds like something out of Top Gun. Like, we're ready for Foxconn 1 or something, you know? Like, it just sounds like some kind of war term. Is that where it comes from?
Probably
this has
not.
Nothing to do with the news article. Sorry.
It's a Chinese company, so I kind of doubt it. But I don't know. I don't know if it's a pronunciation of a Chinese word or...
Charlie Bravo, Foxconn, Delta 7.
Microsoft's Twitter bot has come back to life and then promptly disappeared again. Tay, the AI that learned to be racist from Twitter, started tweeting again at 3 a.m. last Wednesday, but curiously just retweeted itself over and over saying, "You are too fast, take a rest," as essentially spamming all its followers. The account soon became protected, and Tay was silenced once more. I feel like this should turn into a soap opera. The story of the little Twitter, the conflicted Twitter AI bot. Snapchat redesigns chat to add stickers, audio, and video notes. It released a major update that added over 200 stickers for use in chat, easier controls for starting video and audio calls, and the ability to leave a short audio or video note for the recipient when they next open the app. Now their acquisition of Bitstrips makes way more sense to me.
We've had a lot of Snapchat articles lately.
I know.
Why are they doing so much at the same time?
I don't know. Like, just throwing a bunch of newsy news at us. Shout out to
maybe they had a few critiques from people who thought it was a bit of a lame service, and they're improving their offering.
That couldn't possibly be it.
No, that wouldn't be right.
You must have written in a couple million times, Craig. Craig, have you even tried Snapchat?
No.
You need to try it before you knock it.
I know what it is, and that's enough to turn me off the idea. It's the concept that I don't like.
They did
it's
just
like Instagram,
do like
Instagram, but it only
big...
lasts for 3 seconds. Is that right?
No, but this like, well, it's not like, okay, wait a minute. Slow down, sir. You're going too fast. It's not like Instagram. It's like a chat app, but for pictures and videos and things.
How do you chat with a picture?
No, you send people pic. You're just pulling my leg.
No. So hang on. I actually haven't used it. I just have heard about it, and it didn't sound good to me. So if you can sell me on it, I'd be willing to hear. Although we've only got 7 minutes. So
yeah. Well, the redesigned. I think that the redesigned like chat, like structure or whatever is actually really good. I like it.
Okay.
Good
it's,
stuff.
It's a. It's basically a self-destructing pictures and video messaging app.
Which is great for the little photos that aren't terribly important that you want to keep on your phone for the rest of your life. But like to show people, hey, this is what's going on right now. It's a quick, nice little picture into the lives of whoever's Snapchatting you, right?
Yeah, it is like the hyper version of what the internet has become in our day. You know,
and how long until they self-destruct?
No, you look at it and you set a timer from 1 to 10 seconds. Based on what you want, and then the person can see it for that long, and it's gone forever. But you can also do replays. You get one replay a day for free, or you can buy replays, and then you can do the same thing again.
Interesting. I wonder if it really is gone forever. Anyway, there's another can of worms.
Actually, they did find out a few months ago that on Android, at least, they were still storing the pictures on the device somewhere.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Anyway.
SoundCloud has launched a new subscription streaming service. After months of teasing, SoundCloud's subscription music service debuted this week. It's called SoundCloud Go, and in many respects, it's the same as any other streaming service. For $9.99 a month, you get access to songs from popular artists, ad-free streaming, and offline sync. But Go has a hook that no other service can match. A massive library of 125 million songs, most of which are only on SoundCloud. I find this I find this very interesting because it is essentially what it's the streaming service for indie developers, or not indie developers, indie musicians, which is fantastic. I find there's a social aspect to SoundCloud that nothing else is quite tapped into. I mean, I don't use Spotify. I know Spotify has some social stuff, but I'm excited to see where SoundCloud goes with this. I probably won't subscribe,
So you don't think that Apple's Ping social network wasn't a huge success? Are you serious?
Well, it was a huge success, but you know, they killed it so soon afterward. It's not around anymore, so we have to use something that's, you know, less amazing, but you know. No, Ping was awful.
I think that the on-demand music streaming business, and also I would say like videos like Netflix and Hulu and things, mm-hmm. is a mess. Mm-hmm. And people are like trying to win with, you know, their own proprietary content, but then it just makes it to where people have to get all of them. And mm-hmm. you're like paying $100 a month in streaming services, mm-hmm. and it's the worst thing ever. It is not good for consumers.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing about the whole cord cutting movement that kind of started with cable cutters moving away from Comcast and Time Warner and whatever else is in America. And
Foxtel in Australia, I think.
Foxtel in Australia and all that. Those really expensive all-in-one things. And moving to things like Netflix, and people want a la carte, but they don't want to buy everything, and yet they kind of still have to get everything they want.
Yep.
It's an interesting paradox that I wonder how is going to play out in the next 10 years. And Microsoft did things this week for developers. Microsoft held their annual Build conference for developers and announced a bunch of stuff, but I'm not sure what all is important about it, so I'm going to punt to Tank on this one since I'm not a developer.
Yeah, quite a few big things happened. Let me see. One of them was the HoloLens was released to developers, so that's getting closer. The Xamarin.
What is HoloLens?
Oh, yeah, good point. I'm going to have to explain some of these things. Huh? So HoloLens is, if you go all the way back to our very first episode, we talked about virtual reality, augmented reality, and mixed reality. But HoloLens is mixed reality where you get to see holograms and interact with holograms when you have on the headset. And so this is Microsoft's little headset that will put things in the room you're in, say just a calendar. If you put on the headset, you can see a calendar on your refrigerator. Obviously, you can do much more amazing things than that, like explore Mars in 3D. Mm-hmm. So that's essentially what it is, holograms. With a headset on. So that's released to developers let's see, they're making a big move towards bots. They think that bots are the way of the future, and communicating with bots is the way of the future. So whereas right now we have to go to an app for one thing and an app for another thing, and eventually we have 200 apps that we can barely manage, I think they want to have bots. So that you have one app that you can talk to the Domino's bot and get pizza. You can talk to the Starbucks bot and get coffee. You can talk mm-hmm. to Tay if you need some racist conversation going on. So I think this conversational user interface is what they're going for. And one more big thing. There's quite a few, but I'll end with this one. The Bash shell is going to be made yep. available on Windows. So I guess the idea is to make it feel more like Linux. that you can do all the Linux stuff. I'm not a Linux guy, so I really have no idea what I'm talking about here.
It's okay. No one else does either. No one uses Linux.
Nice.
Oh,
we're gonna have some angry listeners, right?
People who listen to this show probably do use Linux.
No, I'm kidding.
But even bigger than that, though, it wasn't announced at Build, but it was like a spinoff of Build that Ubuntu is apparently going to be runnable on Windows.
So that's pretty cool.
Which Ubuntu is a Linux operating system.
So. Mm-hmm. It's the most popular version of Linux. Yeah.
So some big news. It was a really exciting one. I enjoyed watching it.
And finally this week, Tesla announced its Model 3 car, the long-awaited car for the masses. CEO Elon Musk announced the $35,000 car this past Thursday, showing off the low-cost EMV sedan for the first time ever. The masses already love it, with 115,000 pre-orders before the presentation of the car ended. And then in the first 24 hours, the Model 3 reached 180,000 pre-orders. This is for a car that won't hit production for a while, with Musk saying that he's, quote, fairly confident that that deliveries will begin by the end of 2017. This is insane.
So is this this is their version of the Volkswagen Beetle, right? Like a car for the masses?
I don't know that I'd compare it to the Beetle, but what they're going for is an affordable electric car, and this is their lowest cost electric car so far. And they make really nice cars, so everyone's really excited about it. $35,000 is still a little bit out of my reach, but apparently people will buy this thing up like crazy. I just found the numbers flabbergasting.
Yeah, I was joking, by the way, with that car for the masses line. I've just heard that somewhere before. But anyway, it's pretty cool. It looks good.
It costs $1,000 to reserve one of these.
Yes, it does.
Like, when you reserve it immediately, and you won't get your car till 2017. That's crazy.
2017, likely 2018.
It's crazy. It's
ridiculous.
So these are just electric, not self-driving? Is that right?
They do have automated features, but they won't build them as self-driving cars, certainly, because that's not necessarily legal yet. But Tesla's definitely heading in that direction, so... And that concludes Tech You Should Know this week.
And that brings us into Tech You Should Use. This is the part of the show where we look at a piece of tech and tell you why you should use it, why it's been helpful for us, and why we think other people would get something out of it as well. So it's my turn this week. I don't think I've ever done a Tech You Should Use before, but I thought I'd jump in today and give you guys something that I've found pretty useful over the last little while. I think I've mentioned in other episodes that I'm pretty keen on photography, enjoy it quite a bit. Also do some iPhone photography, listen to some podcasts in that area as well. iPhone cameras these days are pretty decent, so... a lot of people are out there taking snaps of all sorts of things, not just selfies. And so this is an app that will hopefully help you with that. It's called Mextures, so like textures, but with an M. And basically, I believe the app is free, although I'll need to double check that before I make claims that I can't back up. basically, what it is it's an app that has a couple of different... core functions. When you first open it, you can use it as a camera, so you can take photos in the app. I never do that. I use either the native app or another one if I'm doing HDR photos. And then it's got a library where you can obviously search your photos to import them. But once you've imported them, there's a whole range of different functions that are available to you in terms of editing that photo. So there's basically a bunch of pre-made mixtures in different categories. So if you want to adjust the radiance of the image, there's 16 different texture overlays for that. You can add grit and grain. You could add light leaks, grunge, landscape enhancement textures. There's 21 landscape enhancement textures. Then there's this thing called formulas, and they're split into categories as well. There's landscape, spring, summer, fall, winter. So they're sort of categorized in that way. Basically, if you tap a formula or one of the texture overlays, it just puts it on top of your photo. But then you can adjust the strength of the overlay, and you can change a bunch of different options in terms of color and brightness and stuff. One of the cool things I really like about it, though, is that there's this thing called guest formulas, where they've got like guest photographers, like artists who have created specially designed mixtures. And so they have like an album for a bunch of different people. There's about 20 people or something. So you can go through and look at people who've actually spent time designing mixture overlays for different purposes, and you can select them, and then you can adjust the ones that they've already created. So there might be multiple layers in a mixture. There might be 6 or 7 different layers in terms of color and texture and tints and things like that. It lets you adjust all those sorts of things. The other cool thing is it ties in with there's a related Instagram account called the Mixtures Collective. So if you just follow Mixtures Collective on Instagram, if you have that, every so often you'll see that someone's posted an image and if you like the look of that image, you just scroll down to the comments and they actually give you what's called a formula code. And then you can take that code, jump back into your Mixtures app and download the formula that they've used to produce that image. So it's pretty cool. It gives you a whole bunch of options in terms of editing photos and changing the look of them. Like I said, there's layers, so you can turn different layers off and see what it looks like with different things at different strengths in terms of opacity and layer order. So it's like a mini Photoshop without the full features of Photoshop, but in terms of just enhancing your photos and making them look a bit nicer in terms of some of the colors and gradients and textures and overlays and things like that, it's good. I think it's a bit less tacky than some of the other apps I've seen that do the same kind of thing. So that's one of the reasons I like it. I think it's kind of more aimed at people who are keen to sort of get in and play with the layers and work out what actually does look good and doesn't look like they've just, you know, thrown 17 different textures on something and assume that makes it better. Are any of you guys into iPhone photography or can you, like, do you do anything with photos that you take on your phone other than just keep them on your phone?
I auto enhance.
That's it.
Now that app sounds really awesome. I wish it was more into taking pictures and editing them on my phone than I am. But
Derek, you have a baby.
Yeah, that's true. Well, Tanya's the one who always
something to take pictures of.
Derek, I'm so glad someone let you know that you have a baby. What would you have done if you hadn't known for the rest of your life?
I would have never taken another picture again. No, but Tanya does take a bunch of pictures of Rainy and edit them together with she uses PicMonkey, which is a website. And the ecosystem for photo editing on iOS I find amazing, and I really
it's huge.
Really want to get her an iPad Pro so she can like do stuff like, because I don't know of really anything on the Mac that would allow such effortless like photo manipulation as some apps are on iOS. I don't know. I need to find a good justification to buy us an iPad Air or an iPad Pro so that she can use it.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot out there. I mean, Snapseed is another big one that I use that I might talk about another time. But there's plenty of options out there if you are keen to do anything beyond just taking the photo and kind of auto enhancing, or just leaving it on your phone. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
I found that last time my wife and I went went on a vacation to Queensland, which is kind of the northern end of Australia, northeast. We she's not super into photography, but she actually really enjoyed kind of, you know, when she had the time, sort of experimenting and playing around. And she even put together a slideshow on her phone to music by the end of the holiday. And I was like, oh, wow, that's more effort than I would have gone to. But I'm just taking pictures. She was like taking them and editing them and then doing something with them, which was cool. So if you're not into it, maybe just give it a try and see if you enjoy it. And that's a wrap for Tech You Should Use.
And now it's time for our main topic this week, which is on a blog post from Tim Challey's blog, titled, "We're More Honest With Our Phones Than With Our Pastors."
So we linked it in the show notes, so you can go read it for yourself. But basically, he's talking about a study recently put out by the New York Times, I think it was, in which they said we are more honest with our phones than our doctors. So our phones know more about our physical health than our doctors do. And Tim is basically just applying that same thing to our spiritual life as well, saying that we're more honest with our phones than our pastors. So he says, when it comes to our physical health, we're more honest with our phones than our doctors. But this transparency goes beyond medicine. It extends to our souls. When it comes to our spiritual health, we're more honest with our phones than with our pastors. Our phones know all about our ignorance, about those things we should know but don't. Our phones know about our wanderings and our wonderings, the questions we have asked and the places we have visited to find answers. They know where and how we are wrestling and where and how we are trying to find comfort. They know about our backsliding or even our heresy long before the pastor does. So that's sort of his main thesis. What did you guys think about this one?
So I think this speaks to a larger culture of fear in the church, not one that is biblically promoted or anything, but one that I think naturally happens with our pursuit to follow God, follow the law, and our fear in our failures, and a general lack of gospel preaching in the church at large. It's hard to talk to someone about our failures because, rightly, we should be, you know, encouraged to do the right thing, or someone will chew us out when we have a repentant spirit, and so we just don't want to. It's hard to navigate that relationship with people, and you know, when someone comes to you and admits something about a moral wrongdoing they have in their lives, you know, what is your response? How do you respond?
I think, I know, like, in my own life, I've been guilty of believing this lie, and I think maybe this is what you're saying. I'm asking if this is what you're saying.
Yeah.
But basically, the lie is, you know, the gospel is we should be perfect.
Yes. Yeah, that is the lie I'm speaking to, and you said it much quicker than I did.
Well, I mean, I just know from my own life, I think that's what you're talking about. But, and here's the trick, though, right? My pastor used to say, deception doesn't sound like deception. It sounds like the truth. That's what makes it tricky.
Mm-hmm.
So the deceptive part of what I just said is we do need to be perfect, right? Like Jesus says, be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that we can never be perfect without him. Mm-hmm. He was perfect in our place. And if we would trust in him, if we would repent of our wrongdoing, we can have his positional perfection, which mm-hmm. frees us to pursue actual perfection as well,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that's the trick of it, is we should be, but we think that this side of heaven will see the end of sin in our own lives, and the reality is we won't. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like I used to think, like, we need to just not, well, if you confess that something's wrong with you, then you must not be a very good Christian.
Right.
Obviously, that's not true. That's not the gospel.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's that lack of understanding the distinction between law and gospel in our church, in the evangelical world, that I think contributes to this issue, that people are trying to be perfect because they think it's necessary and are afraid to admit their wrongdoings and be, you know, absolved of them. Like, have people encourage them that in the gospel, when they are repentant, that Jesus always forgives. I meant to have a second part to that thought, but.
Well, while you're thinking, I think also, you know, the other tricky part is that holiness is possible, right? Like if you've read mm-hmm. Hole in Our Holiness by Kevin DeYoung, it's a good book on sanctification and Christian life. you know, he has a whole chapter on holiness is possible. We have this defeatist mindset that we can't actually conquer sin by the power of the Spirit in our lives, but we can,
mm-hmm.
That we've been raised to new life in that. And that's one of the benefits of that newness of life. And so it's like, there's this weird, two-sided coin here that we're kind of talking about, that is hard to think through at a practical day-to-day level. Because we know that we're not perfect
and yet we are to pursue our own sanctification. We are to work at it. And by God's grace and power, we will accomplish the defeat of sin in our own life one day.
Yeah. I was just looking up a passage of scripture that we can brings to bear on this, that the grace of God forgives, but on, let's see, it's Titus 2:11. For the grace of God has appeared, bringing salvation for all people, verse 12, training us to renounce ungodliness and worldly passions and to live self-controlled, upright, and godly lives in the present age. And waiting for our blessed hope, verse 13, the appearing of the glory of our great God and Savior Jesus Christ, 14, who gave himself for us to redeem us from all lawlessness and to purify for himself a people for his own possession who are zealous for good works. So in verse 14, especially, you see, God gave himself to redeem us from all lawlessness. We are not deserving of God's grace at all. He was the one who plucked us from unrighteousness. And then after our justification, he sanctifies us. He purifies for himself a people for his own possession who are zealous for good works. But our good works do not define our good works, or rather, our sinful actions should not put us in fear. I mean, we should be fearful of a holy God, but we have been saved. We are, you know, the doctrine of perseverance of the saints comes in here, where God will not let go of his people. You know, he has saved you. No matter what you do, he won't let you go. You know, be encouraged in that. Repent of your sin and be absolved. And, you know, the gospel is something that should make you feel free, not guilty all the time, unless you're running from your sin.
Well, I would say, I might maybe clarify and say what I mean is the mark of a Christian isn't perfection. Mm-hmm. It's repentance and confession and continual ongoing repentance and confession. You should be seeing the direction of your life should be toward holiness. There should be dramatic change over time. Mm-hmm. Rather than doing spot checks on ourselves like we often do, we should be looking over long periods of time. And I know, like, I can tell you from my own life, and other people would say the same thing, that, like, there was a radical death-to-life transition in my life. This is the testimony of every Christian, where you go from hating God to loving God, right? After that happens, you begin to also become like him, like Jesus, over time. It's just a gradual thing rather than an immediate one.
I would clarify your death-to-life transition point there, though, as many people may not see that transition necessarily because they were either saved very young or it was just the way God planned that out. Like, not everyone has dramatic transformations when they become a Christian, but the mark of repentance does signify a believer.
So my thoughts on this.
Yes.
Unless anybody wants to respond to that. No. Okay.
You asking me?
Yeah, he just commented on what you said, so
that I get. I mean, I don't disagree that there are people who get saved at a young age, and you know, like my wife, for example. I know there are lots of people who would say, "I don't remember a time when I wasn't a Christian," and that's awesome. Like, that's a testimony of the grace and power and just beauty of God in salvation and bringing His people to Himself.
Yeah.
I'm not disagreeing with that.
Yeah,
I was saved when I was like 19, 20, 21. Maybe even 23, I don't know. Somewhere in that, somewhere in there, I got saved, and it was like a very dramatic thing. Mm-hmm. This was later in life. So,
yeah.
Tank knows. Tank knew me before and after. So,
Yep. And you knew me before and after as well.
Okay,
you just didn't
know
me extremely well. Yeah, I became a Christian my summer of my sophomore year, and you knew me the semester before that. Yeah.
Right.
Just didn't know me well.
We didn't know each other very well.
Yeah.
I lived with you, yeah.
That one is when I was just starting out, so.
Yeah.
Good times. Anyway, so what I was thinking on this, I agree with everything you guys have said, of course, about just repentance and seeking help. But as far as the article goes, when he's talking about phone knowing more than pastor. And I like metaphors, so I'm going to hang out with the doctor metaphor for a while. My phone definitely knows more than my doctor. And I'm okay with that, you know? because a person who goes to his doctor about every single little thing is called a hypochondriac, I believe. And they're put up with by nice doctors and annoyed severely by less nice doctors, I think. And then, so I think there's like different levels. I don't bring every question I have to my pastor. I don't bring every sin that I, every time I sin, I don't go to my pastor. And I'm part of a small church. Some people are part of a large church where it would be crazy if everyone did that. But I think there are levels, and strongholds, and in my opinion, some may disagree, and it also may just be on who people have in their lives, who they can trust around them. But like in my opinion, the strong hard things that I've had issues with in the past, those I bring to the my pastor. There are less troublesome sins or things that may be struggled with day to day, that I go to my close friends for accountability. And then there's other things that maybe just Michelle, or maybe it's just dealt with in my quiet time. And the same with questions. Like I think we're called to study and figure things out on our own. And the phone is a great resource for that. So I don't know if Charlie's was saying it was a bad thing. It's definitely bad if we never go to our pastor, no matter what we're struggling with. But just like whenever I'm sick, I don't always go to the doctor. I think it makes sense that we don't always have to bring everything to our pastor.
You're saying you go to the doctor for when your leg's broken, but not necessarily when you have a headache that could be fixed with Tylenol. Is that what
yes.
you're saying?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's great. I don't disagree. I just wanted to continue your analogy there, because I thought it was a helpful one. Mm-hmm. I might say one thing, though, about the size of church. Ideally, a larger church would have more elders who are shepherding the people. Mm-hmm. So even if, you know, I think we have a very American definition of pastor, and it's, so it's only the guy that preaches from the pulpit every Sunday. Mm. But, you know, in the Bible, it's elder, right? Elder and pastor are synonymous. And so you, hopefully your church has a plurality of elders. Maybe they don't. We don't have to get into this if we don't want to. But hopefully there's somebody who's shepherding you, who, like Hebrews 13 says, is watching over your soul, and will at one day give an account before God for that. Even if it's not the guy who preaches from the pulpit, hopefully there's another elder who you feel like you can talk through these things with at your church. Not saying you specifically, Tank, but anybody listening to this.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's a good point.
You know, I go to a fairly large church, and we have a big set of elders, you know, to pastor and shepherd all these people. So,
to be honest, I'm not surprised that things like this article, like Ben said at the start, I think we've talked about iPhone obsession, or iPhone, like, I guess, relying on interaction through our phones and stuff in past episodes. I think it just seems to me like Charlie's is sort of picking up on and even highlighting the fact in the second part of the article that this is just a normal byproduct of the society we live in the way that people think about authority and where we should get good, solid, reliable information from. People are willing to, the whole thing of postmodernism is it's okay to ask questions, right? So people are more than happy to throw their questions out there into anywhere that will hear them. And unfortunately, people are often more than happy to also receive answers from anywhere and everywhere. I think the call for us as Christians is to realize that God has gifted those pastors and elders with leadership capabilities and with wisdom. And there are certain things that, sure, you can find something on Google that will be an answer to how do I change a tire or whatever. But when we're talking about the really deep things of life, it might still be okay to get some ideas from the internet, but sooner or later, you need to have something that you can come back to, which is obviously the Bible, to say what is the truth about this. But if you struggle to understand what's in there, then certainly a pastor would be the port of call. And I think what's interesting is he sort of critiques Christians for not doing that, but then he also says, you know, this is what's happening, and so we as Christians have a responsibility to make sure that the content that we're producing is accurate and helpful and good.
and if we're writing blog posts and all those kinds of things, that we are, you know, accountable for what we produce, and that what we are producing is actually going to be of value to people and speaking the truth. What do you guys think about that? Like, I mean, we're doing a podcast. I write a blog. Tank has a blog. You know, how do you think this topic kind of crosses over into the way Christians speak about the world and what we're putting out there for people to digest, I guess?
Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. That's the verse I thought of when you were talking there. and I think, you know, we're tempted again to define teaching really strictly, but the fact of the matter is there's hundreds, even thousands of people listening to this who, you know, are learning from us. And I think we will be held accountable for that. And mm-hmm. so, you know, it's not the same as us being pastors or elders. We're not, we'll be the first people to tell you we're not, mm-hmm. you should not be coming to us for spiritual help in that sense, as you should a pastor or an elder at your local church. But that doesn't mean that we're not teaching in some sense. And so I would totally agree with you there, Craig. I think it's a sobering warning for us to consider seriously the things that we talk about and say here. And for all those other public figures who are podcasters these days.
If I remember correctly, though, he's not only warning us about what we put out, but he's also saying that we should continue to put it out. Like, there's the warning of put out good stuff, but there's also the call to continue putting out more stuff. And I thought that was really good too. Like,
That's what I should have been clearer on that. That's kind of what I was meaning. Like, we need to be ones who have answers for these things.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, we need to make sure that our answers, you know, answers to questions or content that we produce that helps explain the Bible or whatever it is accurate. But definitely not saying that we shouldn't do it. It's just, like Ben said, be careful how you do it and make sure that what you're doing is true and accurate. And I think his, you know, something that challenged me a bit was that, like I said, I have a personal blog that's really just what I'm thinking about certain things. I did a couple of posts recently on Easter because they were, you know, it was Easter. so I kind of just posted what I was thinking on Good Friday and Easter Sunday. And sort of when I read the article, I was like, should I, you know, do I need to be checking that with anyone? Should I be getting my pastor to read over things before I put them out to the broader world? I'm pretty thankful that I have a close family member who is a pastor who subscribes to my blog and reads everything I post. So I kind of know that it's going through a level of filtering, but
mm-hmm.
Did challenge me that maybe my local church pastor should also sort of be in that loop, or at least know what I'm posting, sort of thing. So there's sort of some stuff that personally I thought was really interesting and definitely worth sort of taking on board.
Well, and I think it's really freeing that God is the one who does the judging too, because in this life there's grace for growth. So, you know, retraction's a thing and correction's a thing and even rebuking is a thing. And so you're able to, like you just said, Craig, you can have people read that and you can learn and grow as you go, and you can change your mind on things and become more like Jesus in that way. And that's a very freeing a thing for us. But yeah, you're right. There's also a level where we have to consider that people are reading it even before you change your mind. So it's hard. I also thought, Craig, you and Tank were saying something very similar, which was, you know, I thought this was great, by the way. God has gifted certain people in certain things. So we shouldn't, there's a sense in which not everyone is equal because they're not equal in function.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly mm-hmm. what Paul is talking about in 1 Corinthians 12 when he talks about the body and everybody in the local body being necessary because we're gifted differently. And so it's like God's given the church pastors and elders to shepherd people. That's their gifting, right? And so we would be silly, Tank, like you were saying, we'd be silly to go tell everybody about every little thing because, you know, that's not who God's gifted to do that for the body,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so it's amazing that we can recognize the goodness of God in that and just, I think, rejoice in that too.
Yeah, everyone's equal in value before God. which
I said that more to be provocative than anything.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Everyone's equal in value because we're all made in the image of God, but there are definite differences in role, and that's not a bad thing. Yeah. It's not a bad thing to say
absolutely
someone is a pastor
or
elder. Exactly, and someone serves in a different area, for sure.
Some of our roles are to be awesome. Some of our roles are to be not gingers.
Oh, I like this episode.
So maybe this may be a hard question to answer, but what do you guys think would be is a sign that we are placing too much on our phone or on ourself, I guess would be the idea of what research we can do rather than going to a pastor? So like for ourselves and for our listeners, like what are some things that we should be on the watch for to think, you know, maybe this is something that I shouldn't be dealing with on my own. I should be seeking help.
Maybe we can start with issues of sin and sort of zoom in from there if you want. Because the point you were making earlier was that you don't confess all sin in the same way to every single person, which I don't disagree. Mm-hmm. But we also would say that at least in the consequences, the way that our sin affects our lives, there is definitely a difference in severity, right? A lustful thought versus actually having an affair with someone other than your wife, there are totally different consequences to those two things.
Yeah.
And yet, both are sin, both separate us from the glory of God, the holiness of God, and cause us to need Christ for salvation and redemption, right? But the consequences are totally different. So maybe it's helpful to think about it from the perspective of consequences for yourself and for others in terms of making that decision of, do I go to a pastor or not?
I think along those lines, too, if there is a sin that we keep saying, oh, I can handle it, and then it comes back, whether lustful thoughts or affairs, just whatever. Like if it keeps coming back and we keep saying I can handle it, but then it never seems to get handled, I think that's something to stop saying, like, oh, I can handle this, because it's proving that we can't, and that's a sign that we should be seeking help. Mm-hmm.
For sure. I think also, like, God's given us community as well as pastors. And so, you know, there may be things that you confess to your community group or to your friends in your local body or to your spouse even, that, you know, you confess to them and then they bear those burdens with you as well. It doesn't necessarily all have to be to one person. You know what I mean? We're living in community to be sanctified in community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, confession's good. If we're, I found that like people who are very quiet and seem to have good theological things to say, seem to be intelligent, whatnot, they can be looked at as like almost perfect. Like, sure, they sin, but they don't sin. And then that person almost separates themselves from other people who are more wide open and willing to talk and I guess feel, I don't know, live off emotions or whatever. There's almost like a separation that I find in people's minds that puts the quiet person on a pedestal. So anyway, for those of us that are more quiet and people tend to just respect because they don't say anything stupid, I think it's even more important to be ready to confess, because it's easy to be looked at as like, oh, you don't say anything, you must never sin. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. But it's good to say like, no, I mess up all the time. Like in this way, not just say I mess up all the time, just roll their eyes and like, yeah, right. And that just makes a quiet person seem more human, if that makes sense. I speak from experience, I'm sure you guys can guess that just for some reason a lot of people don't think I mess up much, or they tell me something that's they're struggling with, and then if I never reciprocate with things that I'm struggling with because I'm too quiet and I just don't speak what's on my mind easily, well then it's a very off balance relationship. And so I have had to learn, like, even though I'm more of a private person and like to keep things more internal, if I'm developing a good relationship with somebody, I need to learn to be ready to confess things and just say, mm-hmm. I messed up, so that there isn't that weird off balance in the relationship. So I don't know if that makes sense. Hopefully it does.
Yeah.
We're all very quiet this week, and I'm wondering if it's because we're thinking about how many sins we need to confess. Not that that's funny, I guess.
I think what we're doing is we're encompassing kind of how we deal with sin and how we deal with sin. So this goes into all those categories with repentance and confession, and you know, having pastors and elders that we can go to for confession and all these things. This is more, I guess, a topic on sin than anything. Yeah, we've kind of covered the gamut.
Well, there's a line in the King's Kaleidoscope song. I don't even know which song it is, but it says, "I glory in my sins forgiven,"
mm-hmm.
which I think is really great for this discussion.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's amazing that we have a God who forgives when he doesn't have to and when he's not obligated to.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't because of how great I am, it's just because of how great he is. All right, you guys got any recos this week?
I have. I'll reco some music again. I went to a concert on Good Friday evening that was held at a church that I've been visiting a few times lately in my local area, and it was by a singer-songwriter called Jamie Seafang, which is Seyfang. And he basically, there's a festival in Adelaide that has it's like a fringe festival. It has this thing called the Garden of Unearthly Delights, which is all just like crazy circus acts and music performers and stuff. And he's written an album called The Garden of Sinner's Delight, which talks about, it sort of tracked through some of the story of what happened in Gethsemane and the Last Supper and the events around Easter. I think there's also a song that touches on the incarnation as well, but it's kind of mainly around Easter. So he performed with his band, and I just found it really good, quite chilled, laid-back music. You can find him on Bandcamp. It's just jamiesefang.bandcamp.com. He's got an EP up there, which you can buy for $7, or you can buy a physical copy if you want to do that too.
Cool. And I have a reco as well. My reco will be an app called Journey. It is a journal app that I've been using just recently. I thought it would be fun to try to do micro journaling, which I don't know if I'll be consistent with it, but basically what I'm trying to do is take a picture roughly every day and then take like 5 minutes to sit down and just write about the day, not worry about it being deep or detailed, just whatever the highlights that pop into my mind, just write real quick about them. So Journey is the app that I'm doing it in, and it's been pretty enjoyable so far. I bought a Bluetooth keyboard that connects to my phone for $10 so that it would make typing on my phone bearable. But it's been a good experience. So try it out if you ever have wanted to journal.
So I gather no one here has heard of Homestar Runner before.
I have.
Okay,
I have as well.
All right.
I've heard of it, but I don't know much about it.
I felt like
it.
I was taking crazy pills there earlier in the thing. Well, I was, because there was something playing in my background. But, okay, so Homestar Runner is an online cartoon that has kind of been dead for a few years, occasionally popping up cartoons here and there. But it was a big, big part of my teenage years. I loved it. I watched every single thing on the site probably 6 to 20 times. And they just came out with a Marzipan's Answering Machine version 17.2. And it follows the characters over the past like 7 years, and it makes me happy and sad all at the same time because I don't get to see these characters anymore. I feel like it's almost a farewell or a, I don't know, like a gift at the end of a very long run. I hope they go back to making more of these, but clearly this is less of a priority in the creators' lives at this point. But anyway, it was delightful hearing from them again. That was just released April 1st. So You probably haven't seen it yet, unless you follow their Twitter account. So, yeah, check that out.
And if you would like to connect with us, you can jump on our Slack channel, which is at slack.techreformation.com. And also, let me just say, if you don't get on Slack after you sign up, we get emails about who goes inactive. So you need to jump back in. I'm calling you out because the conversation is good.
Yeah. You can follow us on Twitter at Tech Reformation. You can and like and share our posts on Facebook.
You can jump on our website, techreformation.com. There's tags on there. Check out the episode tags if you want to see the topics we've talked about.
You can email us at ask@techreformation.com. Feedback, questions, concerns, whatever. We'd love to hear it.
We are a part of the Theology Mix Network now. You can check out our tag on their website. There's links in the show notes. And check out the master feed on iTunes. We and the rest of the podcasts on the network are on there, and you can check them all out. Pick and choose or subscribe and listen to every single one of them.
And guys, it's that time again. We need you to leave us a rate and review on iTunes. If you've not done this and you've listened to more than 2 episodes, you are who I'm talking about. Please go out and leave us a rate and review. It helps us a ton. We can get into new and noteworthy or what's hot on the religion and spirituality section. Kick some of those heretics out of their place.
That's right.
Unless you really didn't like us, and then please don't write a review because that just drags us down.
Agreed. Agreed.
Music's used by special permission of Matthew Parker. You can check him out on SoundCloud and iTunes.
This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Someone's playing Homestar Runner again. Who's playing Homestar Runner?
Derek, are you serious? Why are you...
Craig?
What? I don't even know what it is.
Okay.
I don't know what's happening.
Derek, are you sure it's not a hidden tab on your computer or something?
You guys? Yeah, I reckon Derek's just like constantly distracted by this thing.
Derek, oh my gosh.
No, it's a sound clip that plays randomly.
Derek, are you sure that it's not just it's like one of those things where you haven't turned it on? You haven't
it's
turned
an
it off.
April Fool's thing with the Homestar Runner wiki. I'm sorry. Okay.
'Dead air. So did you any of you guys get fooled by an April Fool's at all?
Who's going here?
Oh, dead air. My favorite part is when Craig says, oh, dead air. Like someone's listening to us live or something, and this isn't going to be edited out. They'll never know.